Okay, resume the hearing. It's day 18, the 11th of August. We have the Aurora team zooming in from Dunedin. So Mr. Pierce, I presume, and you have the floor.
Thank you, Commissioner. Council's name is Pierce, and I'm appearing today with Ms. Dowd, who has filed evidence for the Commissioners. Now, also assisted by Mr. David Patterson, who is the Senior Systems Engineer for Aurora. He hasn't lodged any evidence before the court, but has informed what Ms. Dowd's evidence has been put together. So if there are any technical questions that the panel might have that are outside of Ms. Dowd's expertise, is available and at the ready to answer those. But the questions, of course, primarily directed to Ms. Dowd, who has lodged the evidence. So I've just got some brief opening submissions just to frame what Aurora's submission is. It's a submission on PDP Station 3 and 3B, and it's allocated to Streams 17 and 18. So for any commissioners that we didn't appear before in Stream 16, by way of background, Aurora is the local electricity distribution network provider for the Queenstown Lakes District. Aurora's submission on PDP Stage 3 can be summarised very neatly as seeking to ensure safe distances from electricity distribution infrastructure. There are two reasons for why that is important to Aurora. Firstly, ensuring that the risk to the health and safety of the public in proximity to Aurora's infrastructure is avoided or minimised. Secondly, the operation of Aurora's network is provided for by minimising the effects from reverse sensitivity. That is generally Aurora's focus when participating in district plan review processes and what has guided its submission on PDP Stage 1, which was dating back to 2015, I believe. The results of Aurora's efforts in that PDP Stage 1 are included with the evidence of Ms. Dowd in Attachment 1. Aurora's submission now seeks to provide scope for the Council to carry over those provisions that were sought through mediation and agreed by the parties. And those provisions are sought to be included into the rural visitor zone, the general industrial zone, three parks commercial and settlement zone. That relief was supported by the Section 42A report authors. The only outstanding matter to be addressed in relation to carrying over those provisions is some inconsistency in the drafting between those zone chapters in relation to the NZECP 34 advice note. And that is outlined in detail in Ms. Dowd's evidence, which I won't go into in detail. The last major point of relief for Aurora in this process is in relation to the Wanaka substation at 39 Valentine Road. So just by way of background, a zone substation is a key part of Aurora's electricity distribution network that typically comprises one or more transformers that converts high voltage electricity to lower voltages for distribution throughout the local community. The Wanaka substation at 39 Valentine Road is the last of Aurora's 12 zone substations in the Queenstown Lakes District to be zoned under the district plan review. And it's proposed to be zoned within the low density residential zone. That process has somewhat disadvantaged the management of the Wanaka substation because had Aurora known that the land would be zoned low density residential, then it would have sought greater protections in the drafting of the zone chapter when it was notified in PDP Stage 1. Aurora did not have any scope when drafting its submission on PDP Stage 3 to seek those same amendments, but it considers that it can obtain a similar form of relief through what it's seeking today. The provisions which arise out of mediations on PDP Stage 1 direction of high voltage sub-transmission lines, but only when they're located within an adjacent row, so they wouldn't assist with the Wanaka substation here. So in terms of Aurora's relief, it's seeking a building restriction area in the area immediately surrounding the Wanaka substation. Following consultation with Aurora's engineers, a smaller setback is now supported. Though, in Ms. Dowd's evidence, the types of activities that could occur within the building restriction area include parking areas, green field, walking tracks, or ideally some form of asphalt roading. So to give effect to Aurora's relief, it sought to include a new zone stand within Chapter 7 so that applicants who consider that they want to establish a building or structure can obtain Aurora's prior written consent, and that essentially allows Aurora to have some input into the process to assess on a case-by-case basis whether that type of building or structure can appropriately be located within that building restriction area. Finally, Council submits that the relief to protect the Wanaka substation from gross sensitivity effects is supported by the proposed regional policy statement, as well as the strategic directions in the PDP. An example of a policy in the PRPS is policy 431. It requires regionally significant infrastructure, including lifeline utilities, which Aurora's infrastructure is, are not compromised. And the evidence in the start is that buildings and structures located in proximity to the Wanaka substation are likely to compromise its functional needs, which includes the operation and future upgrades. In my submission, the district plan is required to address that. That's my opening submission, so if the commissioners have any questions, we're available.
Mr. Pearce, I have effectively one point of information to start with. At paragraph 11, you talk about the resolution of the RPS and say, subject to any issues being raised. Ms. Scott made the same submission when she opened the council case, but I understood that the deadline for raising any issues was more than a month ago. So were any raised? Is that process still going on, or has it been finally resolved?
I'm not aware of any particular issues being raised in relation to that consent order. I confess that that part of the submissions was carried over from Stream 16, where that was a live issue, but I'm certainly not aware of any issues being raised in relation to the final consent order that might be of issue, but for today's purpose, the relevant objectives and policies in the PRPs have already had consent orders granted, so the final consent order isn't of any relevance to the Commissioner's decisions in terms of regionally significant infrastructure.
And it seemed to me that the RPS provision could equally be given, implemented by an expansion of Aurora's designation. So I'm interested in why Aurora hasn't pursued that option.
So that is certainly another process that Aurora could go down. Unfortunately, when the PDP, because of its staged review, when the designations were rolled over in PDP Stage 1, it wasn't aware that in PDP Stage 3 that this land would be zoned low-density residential. So had it had that knowledge, it may have chosen to extend that designation then, but it would have introduced an irregularity to the designation, because Aurora doesn't own the areas surrounding the designation, so it often involves a lot of private negotiations. negotiations with those landowners where the designation is essentially a blight on that land. The process that Aurora is going through with PDP Stage 3 will still allow landowners to have some activities in that area surrounding the building restriction area, but Aurora is just seeking some input in that process, and that's through that zone standard. So going back to the, it's certainly possible for Aurora to still go down that designation process, but for the immediate purposes, that's not what has been sought today.
I understand that. The concern I had was that it seemed to me that the provisions you're suggesting are equally a blight on the neighbour's land. The difference being, if it were designated, the landowner might get compensation, where if it's not designated, they bear that cost.
Yes, but Aurora hasn't commenced the designation process, and that might be some ways down the track. So it's suggested that if a designation process were to occur, then an interim measure through the district plan might be required, and it's less of a blight on the land because Aurora can still provide prior written consent to any applicant to put a building or structure there, and it's not clear. I mean, the substation is existing, so it's already a blight on the land, and any activities that neighbouring properties might want to undertake, they do so at their own risk, and it's not a risk that Aurora wants in the first place because it poses a significant health and safety issue if residential activities are occurring in a close proximity. So I don't think the compensation point is a right one, but Aurora can still go through a process of designating in which compensation is an appropriate matter to be discussed, or they can enter into negotiations to purchase that land in any event.
And one last question, Mr. Pearce. At paragraph 29, you talk about plan change for the three parks plan change. Prior to that, the land was zoned rural general. What, if any, setbacks did plan change 4 provide?
I'm not aware of any specific setbacks in the rural general zone other than the general setbacks from internal boundaries, which I believe off the top of my head are 10 metres.
No, I think you misunderstand me. Paragraph 29, you say it was rural general, then it was three park special zone by virtue of plan change 4. What, if any, setbacks were in the three park special zone?
Oh, my apologies. So there were specifics. I can't recall there being particular setbacks in terms of a requirement to like setback 8 to 10 metres, for example, but there was a mapped area in the area surrounding the zone substation to bring that to people's attention, and there was also specific assessment matters when considering other activities to consider things like mounding, as well as any adverse effects on the operation of the Wanaka substation. That is outlined in Ms. Dowd's evidence at the three park zone, heading paragraph starting 61. So those assessment matters are detailed in there, but unfortunately, though, none of those matters addressing reverse sensitivity have been carried through to Chapter 7.
Thank you, Mr. Pearce. I'll just check with the other commissioners if anyone else has any questions. No, Commissioner McLeod?
Not for me.
Commissioner Monroe?
No.
Commissioner Smith?
No questions.
We'll go on to Ms. Dowd now. Mr. Pearce?
Good morning. So just have a brief summary of my evidence as submitted. So Aurora ensuring that the PDP statutory appropriately recognises the significance of the electricity distribution network as a physical resource. Aurora has largely achieved this through the appeal process under PDP Stage 1 and 2. With respect to matters subject to PDP Stage 3, this can be achieved by carrying over the relief obtained through the PDP Stage 1 appeals process through to the provisions of PDP Stage 3 and by recognising the functional needs of infrastructure and day-to-day constraints and needs of Aurora's sub-transmission network. Aurora has sought protection of its assets from adverse effects and particularly reverse sensitivity effects associated with land use activities, which has resulted in various amendments to some chapters as part of PDP Stage 1 and 2 to provide opportunities for Aurora's infrastructure to be considered when land use activities are undertaken. The sub-transmission infrastructure owned by Aurora is critical to sustaining and growing Queenstown Lakes and has positive effects in enabling people and communities to provide for their social, economic and cultural well-being and for their health and safety. So in terms of the submissions that we've made, we do know that the Section 42A report officers for Chapters 18A, 19A and 20 and 46 support rolling over the relief into these chapters, and I have indicated my support for that view. The key issue for us is just a consistent approach so that the provisions that are rolled over are consistently applied rather than some of the changes that have been suggested through the Section 42A reports. In my opinion, it's critical that a consistent approach to Aurora's infrastructure through the district. Aurora's infrastructure, much like municipal infrastructure, spans the entire district and is not fractured between some boundaries. So, district-wide approach to the management of the Aurora network is required to avoid reverse sensitivity effects. And also, just in relation to our site-specific submission to the existing Wanaka substation, what we have sought is a mechanism to be applied in Chapter 7 to avoid reverse sensitivity effects from the notified low-density suburban residential zone on that infrastructure. Basically the mechanism that we've sought is a building line restriction. We obviously had some discussions prior to the hearing on the original 20-metre setback. Obviously is an ideal setback from a high voltage electricity asset. Those setbacks can be significantly reduced, but the amount of control that would be required with a reduced setback increases.
Thank you, Ms. Dowd. First question I had was your paragraph 10. You say that the network is regionally significant industry and it's recognised in the RPS and the consent memoranda on stage one. Is it the whole network? I can recall you giving evidence in stage one about the importance of various lines.
The regionally significant aspects of the network are sub-transmission electricity lines and the identified significant electricity distribution lines that feed the outlying settlement.
Thank you.
And that they are they're specifically identified on the maps as an attachment to my evidence.
Thank you. I want to ask you next about strategic purpose, strategic policy 3337 that you discuss at paragraph 17. You've said that ensure that it's given effect by in the zone chapters to avoid adverse reverse sensitivity effects. Of course, avoid is a strong direction, and I'm interested as to how you get avoid from a policy that says manage adverse effects, even if you add in to protect the regionally significant infrastructure. I'm still not clear that that equals avoid.
I agree, it's not just a terminology in how I've written it. Usually it's avoid significant adverse effects.
Next question relates to your suggested standard, and Mr. Pearce might have some input here too. I'm interested in a standard that depends on a third party approval. You can't have a resource consent with third party approval. Can you have a plan standard with third-party approval?
Just to chime in, Commissioner, I'm not aware of how the particulars of the plan and whether or not this is consistent with other standards. But it is typical for Aurora to provide the council with confirmation of their supply. Electricity supply can be theoretically made available, so I would imagine that this standard would work in terms of the applicant engaging with Aurora prior to lodging a consent and, if possible, obtaining that written consent and including that within any application for resource consent if that's required for a wider development. But the zone standard has been suggested as a mode of drafting to give effect to a particular outcome. So if it's not appropriately located as a zone standard, then the scope of the submission can address that in other ways if that's suggested by the commissioners.
Well, I've certainly seen a notification dependent on a third-party approval, but a standard is supposed to be standalone, that the applicant knows whether they meet. Like, this is effectively giving Aurora a right of veto. So my question is it lawful? If it is, tell me why it's lawful.
I guess to address the first point is that it is appropriate for Aurora to have what you say is a power of veto given the adverse effects that we are dealing with.
Can I just interrupt you? I understand the merits. You're telling me why it's a good standard. I want you to tell me why it's lawful.
I need to look further into the issue, apologies, Commissioner, but I'm certainly not aware of anything to the contrary, requiring an electricity distribution provider to provide its consents to an issue like this. I haven't seen it come across as an issue, so unfortunately I'm not able to answer that immediately.
Can you point me to a precedent where a similar provision has been considered and inserted in a plan?
Well, the only one that I can confess on the top of my head is the additional rules that have been suggested for PDP Stage 1 where Aurora is considered as a anonymous with notified. So there is a rule which requires the third parties to be notified. So while the situation is somewhat different because Aurora essentially has the power of veto, but if that isn't appropriate, then perhaps there are the zone standard can be withdrawn and the building restriction area, standing on its own. The zone standard was simply a method by which Aurora could have some input into enabling a building to be located in that area.
Yes, I understand the merits. As I say, I'm concerned about whether it's lawful. But thank you for that. Commissioner Hill?
Nothing further from me, thank you.
Commissioner McLeod?
Just one couple of queries. I understand that you're talking about the risk from potential hazards to person and property caused by earth potential rise, EPER. I would just like to ask why now, surely if the risk is present, the risk was always present. So why extend now? Why wasn't this addressed earlier?
That's a good question, Commissioner, and ideally it would have been addressed earlier, but the land has only been notified as low density residential zone through PDP Stage 3. Previously it was three parks special zone, which had greater setback requirements, so it's only required now because a residential zoning has been notified through PDP Stage 3.
So the risk to somebody walking there is irrelevant compared to the risk of someone living there?
Yes, well, theoretically it is less because there is now a greater potential for a lot more activities to be in the area immediately surrounding the Wanaka substation. For example, low density subdivision can go down to 450 metres squared, whereas I'm not aware of that being able to occur under the three parks special zone.
And one final addition to that, with regard to applying to Aurora for consent, and irrespective of the third party question and the legality of it raised by the other commissioner, if the risk and the potential consequences are high, is consent ever going to be given? Or is this a de facto block?
It's certainly not anticipated that it would work that way. The whole idea of having discussions with Aurora is that we can assist in providing comment on mitigation measures that could be utilised to prevent harm.
Thank you. That's all.
Commissioner Munro?
Yeah, thanks, Ms. Dowd. I just want you to walk me through how you see the relief sort working in terms of its effectiveness. So let's assume that we're persuaded to agree with Aurora's relief relating to the Wanaka substation. And let's assume an applicant seeks resource consent to occupy the building restriction area. As I see it, Aurora simply gets the standing of being a submitter. I don't see that the council's compelled to agree with any concerns that Aurora has. So what's the basis for assuming that this will actually be effective? As often happens, submitters don't always get agreed with in resource consent decisions. So what's the basis for assuming Aurora is always going to get its way?
We don't assume that we'll always get our way. I think that obviously the issue is health and safety. So we've got an obligation to ensure that the health and safety of the public is always at the fore. So if a proposal was put forward for a residential property that's sitting right up against the boundary, then potentially there would be a need for a mitigation, either a blast wall or a sound attenuation. So that there's lots of different measures that can be done. It really just comes down to cost.
I'll put it another way. Would you accept, in terms of the relief sought by Aurora, that whatever that mitigation outcome is, Aurora is effectively signing it over for the council to decide what that should be? Because Aurora doesn't become the consent authority, it simply becomes a submitter. Or have I got that wrong? Am I not reading the relief you seek correctly?
Part comes into the council's realm, I suppose, if there are assessment matters. So if there were resource consent requirements, which obviously there's not always, but if development was brought within a certain setback and consent was required, then an assessment matter as part of that application would bring it back into the council's realm. And it would be on the applicant to provide the information on how it can actually be addressed.
So just my last question then. So do you think it's unlikely in that event that the council would grant consent to an applicant on the basis that it was satisfied, all those assessment matters were addressed, but Aurora still had residual concerns? Do you not think that could occur?
If we have suggested mitigation that could be taken on board that takes away the health and safety risk, then there shouldn't be an issue.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Dawson.
Ms. Dowd, the council officers on the various chapters have come back with their rebuttal evidence, and in some instances they've responded to the lack of consistency in the different provisions that Aurora's seeking. Are there any outstanding matters still in terms of consistency? Have you been keeping up with the amendments that have come through the rebuttal?
I haven't actually seen the rebuttal apologies.
All right. So you don't know what the current state of the play is in terms of ensuring consistency between the different zones?
No, I don't.
All right. Well, that's fine. Thank you.
Commissioner Smith?
Thank you. Just a couple of quick questions. The power lines that went diagonally across the three park special zone that have been removed, do Aurora hold any easement or otherwise over that, or has that been surrendered?
They would have been there originally with existing use rights, so that there wouldn't have been easements per se, and if any had easements, they would have been removed. Or if they were replaced with underground cables, then easements would have been put in place for the new cables.
Okay. And it's interesting you made the point that you thought this was a change from a non-residential activity under the Three Park Special Zone to a residential. I just note that the provisions under the Three Park Special Zone were, you know, very much residential. It was very similar to the low density suburban residential or medium density zones proposed. How do you see that as being different?
I think the difference, just as Mr. Pierce has mentioned, is that the setback requirements for the low density zone are a lot more flexible than they were in Three Parks. And obviously under Three Parks there was also the assessment matters included to specifically consider reverse sensitivity effects on the Aurora substation.
And in other locations, is it usually the case, what's the usual situation? Do Aurora control the land that they require to keep the public safe from the effects of their infrastructure, or do you protect them through other means like this?
So in the main way, we try to address, say, EPR issues within the substation. The issues around amenity, though, are a bit harder to actually to control. So when we can operate our equipment to comply with district plan requirements, the nature of the noise itself can, you know, people become sensitive to it, and that's kind of outside our control. There's a few things that we can control.
So I suppose what I'm asking is, would you normally, if you required a 20-metre buffer, would you normally own that land as opposed to trying to control it in other ways?
I think in the others, in the majority of cases where our substations are located, they're in rural areas with 10-15 metre setbacks actually away from the substation. So generally then they need resource consent to build within the setback requirements. And at that stage, potentially, Aurora would be considered an affected party.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Pearce, Ms. Dowd, Mr. Patterson, at a brief starring role. Thank you for your input and for zooming in. We'll move on with the rest of the hearing now.
Okay, thank you.
Next submitter is Mr. and Mrs. Wilson.
Good morning. Raywin Wilson, Dave Wilson. We live at 72A Golf Course Road, which overlooks the block of land that is currently zoned Industrial B in the operating district plan. We're here today just to answer any questions about her submission and just to clarify a few further items. I presume you've read the submission,
yes,
so I've tried not to repeat what I said in the submission. We've always considered the council's decision to zone this high block of land to Industrial B from what was previously rural to be a poor planning decision. However, to avoid further environmental court hearings regarding this land, we were keen to compromise with the then owner, who was our neighbour, who we wanted to get on with, and with QLDC, who were one of our key business clients at the time, so we wanted to get on with them as well. And in 2013, we compromised. This compromise was to manage the area exclusively based on a 7 metre above existing ground level limit for this industrial site, and this was due to the recognised adverse effects on surrounding land. The Council's own approach to zoning documents states in Clause 8.7D that Council is required to take into account relevant issues debated in previous recent planning decisions. We feel in this instance they have not sufficiently considered the process that occurred when Plan Change 36 was implemented in 2013. There was good reason at that time why the hearing commissioners and planners considered a 7 metre from existing ground level maximum building height for the industrial buildings to be appropriate for this block of land. Nothing has changed since then to an extent to require or allow a higher industrial building limit. Looking through Council's other documents, their approach to zoning document states that Council's required to ensure any change in the district plan takes into account the location and environmental features of the site, and we don't feel they've taken the very high plateau nature of this area, which is close to residential areas, into account. The approach to zoning also states that there should be adequate separation or management between incompatible land uses. The general industrial zone proposed and the residential zone that are there are incompatible, and sufficient management will not be achieved with the new zoning rules, the height. Council's proposed objective states that activities and development within the zones are undertaken in a way that does not adversely affect the amenity of other zones. We feel this objective won't be met with a 10 metre high GIZ building maximum. Just to respond to the 42A report of Luke Place, that the current provisions relating to landscaping and mounding will address our concerns. The landscaping and mounding he is referring to is to the west of the site. If you look on the map on page 2, you'll see that the bund that was created to mitigate air concerns is to the north of the site. So the west of the site doesn't really relate to air property, though it does relate to other properties. Both bunds, the west and the north one, were built to address issues of noise and visual effects from industrial B zone based on a 7 metre height restriction. Mr. Place also noted that we provided no evidence of the possible adverse effects. These effects were already recognised by planners during the implementation of Plan Change 36 in 2013. A visit to at home, as was made by council reps in 2013, would confirm that the site indeed does affect us more than in a minor way. We have already in 2013 spent thousands of dollars protecting our amenity values due to an ill-considered planning decision. We've currently submitted as residential ratepayers without a business interest in the industrial area, as we no longer own one, and as such have not paid for additional expert evidence or legal representation. The plan change process should allow residential ratepayers to have issues adequately considered without such additional documentation. Finally, this is slightly out of topic, but I think it's very relevant. We are aware that Tussock Rise is applying to change the site to business mixed use. Despite the higher allowable building heights in business mixed use, building controls in that zone would likely result in less offensive buildings and less offensive business types close to the residential areas. This option is more favourable as long as Tussock Rise's proposed plans of having mixed residential commercial activities closer to the surrounding residential areas, with manufacturing businesses closer to Frederick Street, eventuates. And finally, if you do nothing else, and if you haven't already, I encourage you before you make any decisions on this site to go and stand on it and see how high it is.
And tell you, Wilson, we have been we've been up the top of Connell Terrace and observed the height of the plateau. We know
that's
what you're
good.
Talking about.
Thank you. Yep.
I've got just a question from me, and not being involved earlier on. So the compromise you made, was that a consent through the Environment Board?
So what happened was we submitted, and other people in the area submitted, and the commission has decided that there would be a restriction, there was going to be a digging down, that was correct?
Yeah, if they wanted to have a higher building, they'd have to dig down. 7 metres was the height restriction.
So council decision.
So that happened in the council decision, then the developer applied, he objected to that, and that's how we then ended up at mediation, rather than going to the Environment Court.
And so I just presume you're concerned of the 7 to the 10, the additional height, it's a visual amenity,
it's mainly noise.
Noise.
Due to the type of industrial B, which is now sort of swapped over to the general industrial. The visual amenity as well, but obviously we always thought something would be built on that land. We just didn't expect it to be heavy industrial option.
Right, thank you very much.
The bigger the building, the more likely it is to be a noisier operation, obviously, because
And more objectionable to a residential.
So noise is the main concern, but visual as well?
Yes, visual because of the type of buildings you can get in a general industrial, but the noise is the big one for us.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner McLeod?
And just with regard to that, you say in your statement that despite the higher level building height, the business types going to be less offensive. Can you expand on what you mean?
Well, I haven't done a lot of research on it, but I know that there is a guide to the building types, isn't there, for business mixed use, which, and going from what you see on the business mixed use buildings, they appear to be a lot more pleasant to the eye, so that's that visual side of it. And obviously, even if they're high, it's more for a storage capacity, I imagine, like a warehouse. I'm not actually sure which industries require a 10-metre high building restriction. There doesn't seem to be a lot of them. And why the whole of QLDC would have to have a 10-metre building restriction, I'm not sure. But I imagine a 10-metre or 12-metre and a bit business mixed use would be mainly warehousing. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Thank you.
Commissioner Monroe.
Just a quick follow-up to that one. What I've understood you to say is that if it stays industrial, then that 7 metre height limit should stay. Yep. If we were persuaded to agree with a mixed-use zone, then the 7 metre height limit wouldn't have to stay. Or would you still prefer it to stay even if it was business?
Obviously, we would still prefer it to stay at 7 metre high. But, you know, we're reasonable people. We've always compromised a little bit. I think if it's not as offensive, if it's quieter, and the general industrial zone, if it's very like the industrial B, which is what it reads as, it's quite open to some quite objective things. You know,
I want to offer you a little bit of assistance. You gave a response to Commissioner McLeod that you'd done a little bit of research into the mixed-use zone, but you weren't really fully aware of what it could lead to. And you've made some assumptions about things like warehousing. Are you really comfortable giving up on that 7 metre height limit on the basis of not really being fully sure of what that business mixed use zone might allow? Or do you want to take an opportunity to clarify to us that it should be 7 metres?
Well, our preference is 7 metres, isn't it?
Well,
and if there could be a business mixed use with 7 metres, we would be happy with that.
Presumably they could dig down.
They could dig down.
The same way industrial use
could.
Well, the roads are going to be low anyway, because obviously the land's so high, the roads are going to be 3 metres down anyway. So if you're coming off the road, they're going to digging down 3 metres is probably going to be needed anyway.
Okay. Thank you both. Nothing else.
Thank you.
Mr. Dawson?
No, nothing from me, but thank you very much.
Commissioner Smith?
Yeah, thank you. And just to follow on from Mr. Munro's questions, where the mixed business use height limit is 12 metres, and, you know, 5 metres is quite a significant difference in building height. And I suppose exploring the types of activities that could occur under the business mixed use, you could potentially have visitor accommodation up to 12 metres high. Well, you could have hotel apartment building, for instance, up to 12 metres high. What, keeping in mind that there are restrictions on hours of operation and there are restrictions on noise, how would you compare a cement silo versus a 12 metre high visitor accommodation in terms of the impact on you?
Well, visually, there is an impact with the cement silo, with both, isn't there? But with the noise aspect, even though there is noise controls, they are quite hard to get any sort of result with, because they're over a longer period of time. Often noise that we still hear a little bit of noise now from some of the industrial properties behind us, and the noise is intermittent. The noise of a lot of industrial buildings with a slight drone is not really catered for in the noise standards, whereas the noise coming from a residential property is not going to be the type of noise that we hear noise from town now of, you know, functions and pubs and out on the reserve and things like that. It's not objectionable noise. It's not happening all the time. Has that answered your question?
I suppose admitted that you didn't quite understand the scope of activities, the business mix that you
I did. We did realise there's residential as well, and we are thinking that the higher parts of the buildings may be residential, they may be units.
And what gave you the impression that the building forms would be more attractive under the mixed business?
Just something that I read very briefly about a design guide or something to do with that, but I didn't read the actual document, the design guide document. But I assumed that because people were expected to be living around these buildings, that they would be more appealing to residents.
I suppose just one thing to note that there was a specific height limit in one area, for instance, in Meadow Park, I think, applied to the industrial, the general industrial zone. And is that, you indicated that you'd sort of prefer to maintain the 7 metre height, is that something you'd
relief for this
on?
Specific area would be acceptable.
A specific height limit for this site?
Yeah, of
this,
7 metres.
For this area
as
well?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr and Mrs Wilson, for coming to talk to us. We appreciate you taking that time.
Okay.
Yes, we have heard you. As I said, we have been on the site. We understand what
thank
you're
you.
Talking
yes.
about.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We now have the Richardson Group and Upper Perth Transport. Mr. Christensen.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Mr. Chairman, I assume that you have a copy of the submissions that filed in last week.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. So my name is Stephen Christensen, for those of you that don't know me, and I'm appearing this morning for both the HW Richardson Group and Upper Clutha Transport, two related submissions, and I record on behalf of both submitters our appreciation to the panel for its willingness to hear the submissions together, because they are they're closely related, and it's certainly efficient from our point of view to be able to present just once, so thank you for that. Mr. Chairman, I'm in your hands in terms of how you want me to proceed with these submissions. I can read them or speak to them.
I think I'd prefer you to speak to them, Mr. Christensen. I've read them. I'm sure my colleagues have read them also. That was the purpose of you submitting them in advance, so we would be able to do that and avoid you taking us through them word by word. So if you want to highlight anything, then that's fine. I've got only two questions arising out of your submission myself.
Sure. Okay, no, that's fine. As I say, two submissions. The first relating to the rezoning of the existing site at Luggett, which is occupied by the transport company, Upper Clutha Transport, and also Balance Agri Nutrients has its consignment store located on the site as well. So there's a submission seeking rezoning of that, and there is also a submission seeking rezoning of a piece of rural land at Church Road and seeking that be rezoned to the general industrial zone. I make the point that Upper Clutha Transport is a long-established business in this part of the country, with a very prominent site in the main road of Luggett. The existing site will be addressed by Megan Justice in her planning evidence. Importantly, I say in relation to that site that its ability to operate relies primarily upon existing use rights, supplemented by a resource consent that was granted about 5 years ago for one building and associated signage, but the majority of the activities take place pursuant to Section 10 of the Act as existing uses. They were established lawfully prior to the operative district plan, which doesn't make provision for the activity, and obviously the proposed district plan doesn't make provision for the activity for the activities on the site either. The existing site's zone settlement, and the submission seeks that the commercial precinct overlay be applied to a portion of that site. In relation to the existing site, I make the point at paragraph 11 of my submissions that it's reasonable to say that while the existing activities on the site are protected, they are not compatible with the direction the district has now set for the township. And I note that any future proposed land use changes by the occupier that go beyond the narrow protections afforded by existing use rights would attract non-complying activity status. And I make the comment that in my submission, the district plan's intention not to make provision for the existing industrial and related activities on the site at one level was reasonable. And I have, and I say that simply having regard to the amenity afforded by the Luggett Township. It's an attractive location, providing low-density settlement living opportunities for folk, and that the existing activities on the site don't align well with the direction that the plan seeks for the township. Issues of visual amenity, noise, dust, safety issues with heavy traffic moving around the site and on and off it, and so on, create challenges. And I submit that reverse sensitivity must be an issue for that site going forward as people seek to live in the Luggett Township with this industrial activity effectively located in the heart of the settlement. So I make the submission at paragraph 13 that in all the circumstances the best planning outcome for the future protection of Upper Clutha Transport's important business and for the attainment of the settlement zone purpose for the Luggett Township would be for the existing activities to have the opportunity to relocate away from the settlement zone and for that land to be available for settlement zone compatible and more sustainable development. So that's the fundamental proposition in respect of the existing site within the Luggett Township. And my understanding from expressed in paragraph 14 of my submissions is that the outcome which Ms Justice recommends in her planning evidence is supported by the council officers, which is that settlement zone be retained, but that in respect of a portion of the site which is identified in the submission, that the commercial precinct overlay be added. So those are my submissions in relation to the site within Luggett. I now want to turn to discuss the Church Road site. So UCT has identified and holds under contract to purchase a nearby site along Church Road. It's a site of about 13.89 hectares. It's zoned rural in the proposed district plan, and the submission seeks that it be rezoned into the general industrial zone. Mr. Edgar summarises the relevant features of that site. I'd simply make the observation that it's a largely flat site, it's close to the Luggett Township, and it sits between two existing industrial activities. I note that in my submission, it appears from the evidence that the issues that need to be examined, the environmental effects that need to be examined in consequence of the requested zoning change concern landscape and visual amenity, transportation, and to a lesser extent servicing. And those matters are discussed in the evidence that you've read, and you'll hear from the experts, Mr. Espy, Mr. Carr, and not Ms. Greaves because she's on maternity leave, but Mr. Cruden will be talking to her evidence if that's acceptable to you, sir.
Absolutely. I've issued a minute saying basically as long as the substitute is qualified and is across the detail, you don't need to make an application. We'll just go with the flow.
Thank you very much, sir. The submission is that with suitable development standards in place to ensure that effects are managed, as described by Mr. Edgar in his evidence, the site is suitable for industrial zoning, and that in the circumstances that is the most appropriate planning outcome for the Church Road site, and it would also give effect to the higher order planning instruments. And importantly, and this is where the two submissions are related, industrial zoning for the Church Road site will effectively close the circle by facilitating the opportunity for Upper Clutha Transport to relocate from its existing site to the new site, subject, of course, to it obtaining resource consents and going through its normal commercial due diligence processes, thereby enabling or paving the way for the more sustainable development of the existing site and at the same time giving UCT a larger and more flexible site within which it can carry on its business. And then at paragraph 22 and following, I make the submission that whilst the submission seeks the general industrial zoning for the site, the council planners have identified an alternative, more restrictive industrial zoning may be available under the proposed plan that would achieve a potentially similar outcome, and that's the rural industrial subzone, or the RISZ. There's a difference between the planners as to the appropriateness or which of the two industrial zones is the most appropriate one in the circumstances. And Mr. Edgar can talk to you about that. That remains a live issue and something that hasn't been resolved as yet between the planners and their discussion. I make it, at paragraph 23, I make the point that Mr. Edgar and Mr. Place for the council have had further discussions on the appropriate zoning and the controls to be applied. As recently as Friday of last week, and even more recently, yesterday. And those discussions yesterday also involved the landscape experts, Mr. Espy and Mr. Jones, for the council. At the time of writing those submissions, I was unsure where Mr. Edgar might have got to. I'm advised that the position as at now is that the experts have had constructive discussion most of the way there, but have not yet got to the point where they have been able to agree on a suite of provisions and are seeking the opportunity to further conference and report. And I'm not sure, sir, of exactly the format that you might be following for that type of activity, but it seems to me that there is a great opportunity to either eliminate any points of difference or, if that's not possible, to severely constrain them so that the matters that need to be adjudicated are much reduced.
Well, there are other examples of submitters who are in a similar position, and what I've said to them is that I will not direct conferencing because that then raises issues. If the conferencing is unsuccessful, then both parties would presumably seek the opportunity to be heard further, and we're going to close this hearing on Thursday. But what I have said to submitters is that the option is, of course, open to them to continue to attempt to persuade the council's team of the wisdom of their views in order that when the council files its written reply, that reply will reflect that input.
Sir, are you able to give me an indication of when that reply is likely to be?
First week of September.
Okay, thank you.
I need to look at it. I think it might be the first Monday in September.
7th.
Thank you.
7th of September, thank you. Yeah, so as I say, my instructions are that the significant progress has been made, and it's probably best characterised as a matter of fine-tuning to work out exactly what the provisions ought to say, whether they're going to be accompanied by an appropriate development plan or a structure plan or whatever the right formula is that the planners can agree upon to achieve the right outcome. I would say in relation to that too that from Mr. Eager's point of view, he would say that the suite of measures would be equally applicable whichever of the industrial zones the commissioners might consider was most appropriate, whether it's the general or the more restrictive, the rural subzone. From my point of view, I'd make the submission that it's unclear to me exactly why the distinction is there between the two different industrial zones, and I can envisage planning issues arising at the margin between rural industry and non-rural industry, problems of definition, where one shades into the other. And I'm not sure that that necessarily means that there is some abrupt transition point where the effects of the activity are any different. In other words, it may be that in a rural industrial subzone, of which I had the only example in the district happens to be an adjacent piece of land at Luggett, but in the rural industrial subzone, as an activity shades into what the plan would define as being non-rural, being a general industrial zone activity, I'm unsure that that gives rise to necessarily different effects. And so from that point of view, my client maintains that the additional flexibility that's afforded by the general zoning would be more appropriate. It would be its preference.
Thank you. you, Mr. Christensen. I have two questions for you, and one point for you information that may be relevant to your client. The first question is that you've pitched this as an opportunity for UCT to shift. Is it proposed that balance would shift with it, or balance would remain on the existing site on the main road?
My understanding, and as Justice will correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that balance has indicated an intention that it would likely shift.
The next question is, you'll understand that from our point of view, UCT and Balance are sitting utilising existing use rights in a site which you accept is, I think you've couched quite carefully, but not entirely satisfactory from a planning point of view, to use a euphemistic description. From our point of view, of course, there's a risk that we might recommend rezoning of the Church Road site, and UCT sits tight where it is, and another industry moves in to Church Road. Can you give us any comfort about that?
Yes, is the answer, because this is a plan change hearing, not a resource consent hearing, of course. So what I can say, first of all, is that my instructions are that provided suitable zoning is achieved for the Church Road site, and provided the terms of any necessary resource consent are appropriate for that site, it is UCT's intention to move to the Church Road site. And the reason for doing so is, as you identify, on its existing site, it's constrained. And so the ability to move to a more friendly site from an environment, receiving environment perspective, is attractive. That stops short of a promise, because there are matters over which UCT has no control, such as, for example, ultimately what the terms of a resource consent might say. But as I say, the indication is that the company does intend, if the site becomes available and is suitable in terms of its planning requirements, it does intend to shift.
The third question I had relates to the, more or less, your second to last line, suggesting that if it's not rezoned, Church Road is not rezoned for industry, the existing Luggett site is rezoned to BMUS to better provide for the existing activities. I was intrigued as to how BMUS would better provide for the existing activities given that industrial activities are non-complying in the BMUS.
Yeah, well, that's something that you might want to discuss with me, Justice, as well. But what my understanding is that, yes, the BMUS zone doesn't provide for industrial activity, but it does provide for a greater range of other activities than the existing proposed zoning for the site. So the short point is, Mr. Chairman, that if the rezoning of the Church Road site is unsuccessful, then my client is kind of stuck on the existing site and would at least look to achieve as much flexibility as it can on that site, recognising that the opportunity to achieve on the existing site zoning for its industrial use is not sought in this submission, and it's unattainable.
And the last point, more to advise you rather than seek your input, there is another similar situation that we're going to hear later this week of a currently rural zone land sought to be rezoned JIS. That rezoning is opposed further submitter for whom Mr. Nolan QC is acting, and Mr. Nolan has filed submissions for that further submitter, being Scope Resources, saying that the council's got it all wrong, that we have no jurisdiction to recommend rezoning of a site that it has already been zoned rural in stage one through an application of the principles of motor machinists that you'll be familiar with, and that we shouldn't entertain it. Logically, that would have the same answer in relation to this proposal. And what I have in mind to do, since I only read those submissions, Mr. Nolan's submissions, over the weekend, is to issue a minute inviting all those parties who seek rezoning of land previously zoned in stage one to give the opportunity to reply. So you might want to look out for that minute.
Yes, thank you. That was a surprise that you've sprung upon me. So, that yes, I would welcome the opportunity to consider those.
So I'm not going to ask you for the answer to submissions that you haven't read. I think that would be both unfair and probably a waste of our time.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that you're better to consider them and give me a written reply if your instructions are so to do.
All right. Thank you for that.
Commissioner Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Christian. Just a couple from me, and I was a bit of a theme that the Chairman had talked about. It seems like these two submissions come as a package deal, although they don't, I accept that, and one flows on from the other, and they'll stand. So I won't go down there, but I'm just thinking, you can see how, from your client's perspective, it's a win-win situation. But going to the Church Road site and the zone, and I accept the point you take, you make that the effects are the effects and they'll probably be the same. And these might be questions you might want to defer to the planners, but to the extent that there's a legal issue here, if we've got those strategic directions and the urban growth boundaries and what is urban, and as I understand it, the general industrial zone is generally seen as an urban zone, and this is a secondary zone in the rural site, and the rural sub-zone in name suggests that it's an activity which is appropriate in the rural area, but as I understand it's been applied to an existing activity on an existing site, and therefore my question really is, from a strategic point of view, does the general industrial zone fit in terms of the structure of the plan? And the second part of it, is it appropriate to zone something with rural industry, a sub-zone, when it's to provide for a new activity, not an existing one?
So the two questions there, Mr. Hill. The first question is probably, you do want to ask the planners about this, Mr. Edgar in particular. Seems to me to come down to whether or not the strategic direction in the plan is clear that the JIS should only be applied within where you've got growth boundaries.
And hence,
and my submission is, reading the evidence, is that isn't the case, that there is the, without offending the strategic direction of the plan, there is the opportunity to consider that a JIS zoning on a piece of land is appropriate, even though it might sit outside of a growth boundary. And of course, there aren't any growth boundaries in this part of the district. So I don't think there's an impediment, and I don't think there's a planning impediment, and I don't think there's any good effects or planning-based reason for saying we must never have an industrial zone outside of an urban growth boundary. Secondly, this is in relation to whether or not it's appropriate to zone for effectively a new activity on a site using the rural industrial sub-zone. Once again, Mr. Regan will be good to talk to about this, I imagine, but I didn't, on my reading of the relevant objectives and policies, find anything that would indicate that the use of the zone should be restricted to providing for activities that already happen to take place on that piece of land. So once again, I don't see any impediment to using the zoning technique as is envisaged here.
Thank you very much. I'll pick that up with the planners. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. McLeod?
Yeah, just to expand on that slightly, from a legal perspective, the RISZ zone and there being only two sites in the district that apply to it, both of which are either side of the proposed.
I think it's only one side that's RISZ, which is the venison factory closer to Lagat.
And just from a legal perspective, any understanding of why that might be?
No, I don't think it is a legal question. I think this is just a planning question, or it's a quirk of the way that the plan's unfolded.
I throw back to. Thank you.
Commissioner Murray?
Just two questions. Would you accept that there is a planning risk, putting aside what people think the magnitude of that risk may be, but would you agree that there's a planning risk with the proposition of rezoning land effectively to enable a constrained activity to relocate without any guarantee that the relocation would then eventuate?
That can be a planning risk. If you were satisfied on the evidence that without a particular activity relocating to the site, that the new zoning is inappropriate. Mm. So, and I direct you there, I think, to the evidence of the council's economic expert. And I think you'll find that there's an argument that irrespective of whether a particular activity relocates to the site, nevertheless, that it still is inappropriate zoning.
So, following that theme, would you agree that for us to reach a defendable, rational, justified decision in support of a rezoning, we would effectively have to properly disregard any sympathy for UCT's constrained operations because it's not about them as a specific use? We'd have to simply find on the facts that that piece of land was most appropriately put to a particular zoned outcome?
Largely, I would say that. I would say that you have to be satisfied that the zoning that you're being asked to consider is appropriate for the site. And let me put it another way, I think it would be a mistake for you to rezone a piece of land to a fundamentally inappropriate zone simply to, favour an existing activity to get out of somewhere where you prefer it wasn't.
Thank you for that. Just flipping the coin, though, and being pragmatic and understanding what we're being told about the submitter's intention to move, it could be regarded as a known goal for us to support rezoning, but to do so in a way where we imposed a site control that was itself unworkable for the submitter's relocation, such as a building coverage limit or a height limit or whatever the case may be. So the question to you is really just to express to us, are you entirely satisfied that Mr. Redgear's evidence covers all of the relevant parameters that would be necessary to enable the relocation? Or are there any other parameters or operational issues you really think we need to be aware of so that we might not unintentionally arrive at a halfway house where we seek to enable the shift but actually self-sabotage it?
Yeah, thank you. I'm not aware of anything in addition to the matters that are addressed in the evidence that need to be that need to be considered. What I would say is that it's still a work in progress to the extent that the planners are still talking about what the right constraints ought to be. And obviously, I don't think Mr. Edgar's client would be extremely thrilled if what was ultimately presented didn't provide for the transfer of their activity.
Yep. Thank you, that's all.
Mr. Dawson?
No, my questions have been asked. Thank you.
Mr. Smith?
Yeah, thank you. And I'll take guidance on whether some of these questions need to be posed to the other experts. But that question around how do we ensure, if we're minded that the only reason this is suitable is by the releasing of the Lagat site, for other purposes, is there a mechanism which we can ensure that is the case, or that could be offered by the applicant?
Well, I think you would have to be quite creative in terms of what was written into the district plan if you were trying to constrain it to a particular occupier with a particular activity. It's pretty unusual from a from a zoning point of view, I think, to do that. So I do start from the proposition, though, that, as I said in answer to an earlier question, I think that the starting point for you is to think carefully about whether or not, irrespective, if you like, of what you think is likely to happen on that site in terms of UCT shifting over, is industrial zoning suitable for that site? I think the place to start with the inquiry from your point of view, and I'd say that the evidence does support that conclusion.
Well, and I understand your position on that, but as I said, if we were minded that that was the only reason that this would be acceptable, if that it provided a positive amenity outcome for the Luggett community, then, there might be a situation where not having that certainty would limit us from making a different decision.
Well, I think the difficulty for UCT is that it also needs to go through a resource consent process, where the council has some discretion. So exactly what you end up with is still uncertain from UCT's point of view. So even with the appropriate zoning, then there's still controls that council will impose.
With respect, both the general industrial zone and even the rural industrial zone are both do provide a reasonable amount of certainty for a range of activities, do they not?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll move on from that. And as I said, I'll take guidance as to whether this should be directed elsewhere, but the other one is around scale, and the story that we're being expressed is this is about relocating one activity from one site to another, but the reality is that the scale of the provisions that have been put forward for the Church Road site magnitudes greater, both than the existing activity and the adjoining activities. I mean, 25,000 square metres of industrial building footprint is significant. Is more than significant. It's comparable. I think we said that Mitre 10 Mega is 8,000 square metres. So you could effectively have three Mitre 10 Megas. Worth of footprint, and I think, what did we say, 5,500 square metre buildings as a permitted activity within the proposed zone, and by any measure that is magnitudes greater than replacing the activity from the Luggett centre. So I'm just interested, and as I said, I'm happy for you to defer this to the planners, but just interested around that magnitude and scale of the activity.
I think it is a question to ask of the experts, both planning, transportation, and landscape. But I would say that my submission is, from the evidence that I've read anyway, that the site is suitable to absorb that or accommodate that level of development without creating adverse effects, and so the fundamental point is that it's a significantly larger site than the site that's currently occupied by the business. So yes,
but interested in the scale of the activity, not the scale of the site, and particularly if we look at the rural industrial activities, the idea that you certainly get a picture from reading the policies and the rules around that is that was to acknowledge existing activities like truck transport and timber mills and, you know, deer sheds and whatever that were historically in the, it wasn't to provide a replacement for a general industrial zone in the rural area. And, you know, going back to the other discussion is that, as I understand it, a general industrial zone is an urban zone. It's not an activity zone that is applied anywhere in the district. It is an urban zone and is something that is provided for in the urban areas. And once again, we can explore that with the planners if that's more appropriate.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the question is, so it is something to explore with the planners.
Yep.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen.
Yes, thank you, sir. So what I'm proposing to do in terms of the order of witnesses is ask Ms. Justice to talk with you next. So she's given the planning evidence in relation to the existing site, and then we'll move to Mr. Cruden, Mr. Carr, Mr. Espy, and then Mr. Edgar at the finish as the planner who's taken charge of the evidence for the new site, if that's acceptable to you, sir.
It is, but we might have a cup of coffee first. So we'll break for 10 minutes.